Good morning. You're listening to The Beacon. A challenge for me today. We had to take that like three times because I couldn't remember the words. You're listening to The Beacon.
Yeah, for folks who don't notice, Lainey, when she does the opening, she had a little trouble today. Three takes on, what was that, like four or five words?
Yeah, like a half a second of dialogue that I had to say.
Oh, you're distracted.
And it's the same thing I say every week, but for some reason this week it was just eluding me. So
now you've got a lot in your mind. You're
doing the
finals for your yoga.
You know what? That's what it is. I've been packing my brain this morning full of, I have my final exam for my yoga teacher training, well, tonight, which is Thursday. By the time this airs, it'll be Saturday, so I will know by Saturday if I've passed or failed. But I've been packing my little brain full of Sanskrit terms and eight limbs of yoga and chakras. And so, yeah, so simple English words are very elusive to me this morning.
So that's what we need, another yoga teacher out there.
Yes. Oh, come on.
With telling me, talking about chakras.
Chakras.
I think I know one zone. I think purple, is that a...
Purple is the head chakra.
Oh, yes.
The third eye chakra, I believe. I have to review my notes. I was telling you off the air. So I've been taking this style of hot yoga for a few years now. And the yoga sequence for this particular style is the same for every class. So I've got the sequence committed to memory. I mean, I've been taking four or five classes a week for 3 years. So the sequence itself, I'm like, I got it. And I think I walked into this teacher training thinking that I know what I'm doing. Like, I got this.
Uh-huh. Overconfident. Piece of cake.
A little cocky. Yep. This is a piece of cake. Going to be a cakewalk. What I failed to realize until it came down to, like, final exam time was there's a lot more involved in yoga than just, like, calling out poses.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to know what you're doing or you can really hurt your students. So I think that I wasn't mindful of it until
the last minute.
The last minute when I realized, oh my goodness, there is a lot more to this than I had prepared for, anticipated for. So,
have you always been like that? Waiting till the last minute to study?
I have. But you know what? I think as an adult.
Did that work for you?
I mean, I would cram information into my brain, take the test, and do well on the test, and then forget everything. And as an adult, I would like to. I think that, honestly, if I had known going into this exam that it would be so much more in-depth than I anticipated, I would have allotted studying time every week. Like, I think as a mature adult, I would have organized the time, I would have carved out space because I wanted to do well. I mean, I love yoga. I want to be, like, a holistic, complete, comprehensive yoga teacher. But for the sake of the exam tonight, we are just cramming the information into my brain, and then I will take what I can, like, maintain and expand on that moving forward. But
so what is passing, 70 or?
You know, I honestly don't know. And
not killing the instructor?
Maybe something like that. I mean, it's a written test, so we are going to, and it's a written test and a performance test, so there's two parts to it. I'm not really sure what to expect, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But I think that that's the reason that words are hard for me today. So
yes.
Thank you for validating me. I'm not just dumb.
So concentrate on what's going on at hand.
Yes. So how are you? What's going on with you, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Yeah?
I'm getting used to the cold.
Right.
And life is easy. Life is fantastic.
Look at you.
But you know, I was reading, doing some reading, and I found out back in your old neck of the woods in California, they're contemplating coming up with placing a mileage tax on drivers.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, and so usually stuff goes, well, I won't say usually, but sometimes laws like that go from the West and then they find their way toward us. And if it works out there, because apparently some people, they need money to build the roads and maintain them. And some people, when they get their electric cars, they don't have to pay the gas tax or not as much. So they think that one way to make it nice and fair for everybody is to impose a mileage tax and putting some sort of device on your car or somehow figuring out to charge you per mile.
You know, which would be horrible for me because I drive probably 4 to 5 hours a day as a freelance sign language interpreter. I'm always on the road. So they'd have to figure out how to do some sort of break for people that spend so much time on the road. But what's interesting is about, you know, in California, we don't have to pay to use our expressways. There's no system out there.
There's no toll roads.
There's no toll roads. Our expressways are called freeways. And I never, like, that never registered with me until I moved here and was like, well, now I understand why in California they're called freeways, because you don't have to pay for them.
What would we call them here?
Tollways?
I thought we called them expressways.
Expressways, yeah, expressways.
Mm. But what we're getting here is, I think on I-55 they were talking about putting in a toll lane so that if you wanted to go faster, you'd have to pay a toll to use that lane.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
In addition to what you pay, like, with your iPass? So
Well, I don't know if it's in addition to. I think those are definitely the toll roads. But this was along a stretch where there are no tolls being paid, I think, if I remember correctly. I just glanced at the story.
Interesting.
But, yeah.
So is the speed limit like 90 and you can just get down there and fly and have to pay for the privilege of...
I guess it'll increase the limit. I'm not sure.
Interesting. I'll have to look into that. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a big fan of a mileage tax, but we'll see what happens. I mean,
mileage
it seems like
tolls.
They just want to tax the, you know, tax the, I can't think of a clean radio edit word for it, but you know what I'm talking about.
Tax man
wants to come after us.
Well, meanwhile, back at the pass,
yes.
What we have today on our show, I think everybody will find interesting. It's a pretty good show. We're going to talk with Jo Beth Roth. She's director of the workforce development at Goodwill of Finger Lake. And this is something interesting. Did you know that there are farmers who, of course, you know, farming sometimes can be dangerous work and people may get injured and they wind up disabled. There is a national program called the AgriAbility Project. And what they do is assist farmers and individuals who want to continue to farm in their effort, even after they're disabled.
Does it focus solely on those who have become disabled through farming, or is it open to all people with disabilities who are interested in agriculture?
That's an excellent question.
Ah.
So I'm sure that Sandra Murillo asked that question.
I'm sure she did. She's a very intuitive interviewer.
Yes, and got an answer for that, but probably so.
Perfect.
I would imagine. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. And then we're talking to clinical psychologist Michael C. Smith, PhD of the Bergman Institute for Psychological Support here at the Lighthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be talking about the institute services that are provided here.
Yeah, and other things psychological.
Cool.
All
well, that's
right.
Always important.
Yes. And then, of course, the usual suspects, Luke and his laboratory.
Yes, yes, yes. And the awe factor.
Ooh.
Another little heartwarming story to shine a little sunshine on your day.
Of course. And then Brett and Sandy, I believe Brett has been out and about, man about town, trolling theaters, watching and enjoying plays and that sort of thing. And he'll talk about that
today. I love his job. He's got a great job.
Mm.
Getting in the arts.
Well, don't we all?
I don't know. You look a little facetious over there. But
all right. No, we do.
All right. Well, let's get this party started. Right after this, we'll be back with Jo Beth Roth.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Being a veteran here, I think, has helped me. I could not see, because this is why I initially was brought here by a counselor from the VA, because like, they collaborate with each other and help us to get our vision better. When I first walked in here, I didn't know the life of a blind person. I actually didn't know. And when I came here, I walked through the door and I could see how people were so, you know, they act like they could see. And it was so inspirational to me. I cried like a kid when I first got it because I was overwhelmed to see how people can deal with blindness, you know. And the Lighthouse really, really has helped me with a lot of things because I've learned to be more knowledgeable about computers, and they have an exercise class that they teach us how to exercise. Every fourth Friday of the month, we have a luncheon where all the seniors meet. We sit there and talk about different events and different things. And my greatest passion right now is being on the radio, reading to the blind. That's my greatest passion. I really love that. Number one is to be able to give back to people that can't see, because I was overwhelmed. And I promise God within myself that I will do this until I cannot see again. This is my greatest passion in my life.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Well, good morning, everyone. And this is Sandy Murillo again with an interesting segment here on The Beacon. You know, a lot of us that live here in Chicago or around the Chicago area, we might not be very familiar with farming and how it affects people with disabilities, the different challenges they might face, different accessibility needs they might have. But the AgriAbility Project actually works to help farmers make farming more accessible for their needs. And joining us today is JoBeth Rath. JoBeth, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Sandy.
JoBeth, you assist farmers to make farming more accessible. But in what way do you assist? Do you provide equipment? Do you provide referrals? What type of assistance do you provide?
So what our assistance really consists of is, number one, letting people know it's possible. So that's the huge message, is that if somebody has an accident or an injury and all they've known their whole life is farming, which most of our United States farmers are, generationally connected to a farm,
sure,
or maybe removed by one generation, but they know farming and it's what they want to do. It's their lifeblood.
Mm-hmm.
So what the first thing we want to do is deliver the message, it's still possible. And we have several farmers out there in the country that advocate and say, look at me, I'm paralyzed and I'm still farming, and they'll call people and say, you can do this, and that kind of thing. So the first thing we do is give people hope.
Sure.
The next thing we do is work with them to assess their situation. So what is their injury or their impairment, and what is it they need to accomplish on their farm? So we do what's called a worksite assessment, and that consists of everybody on the farm, family, the farm workers, anybody that's involved, mm-hmm, participating, to say what kind of work needs to be done on this farm and what does this individual need to be able to do, what equipment do they need to be able to get on, and how do they access their home. So oftentimes people think of it as like tractors and barns, but we also look at someone's home, because overall health, can they get to their bathroom okay? Can they, have all the comforts of home, that they can get good sleep and,
mm-hmm,
stay healthy and well-rested, those kind of things.
Sure.
So that assessment takes place, and then we work with that individual to look at their needs and where those needs are available. So if it's a lift, for example, to get somebody onto their equipment, and hand controls, because maybe they've lost lower extremity use, we look at where those could be purchased, and we line up usually what is required by vocational rehabilitation is two or three costs and products. And then we work with the consumer to take that information to vocational rehabilitation in their state and look for funding to help subsidize what equipment they need to keep their employment. It's also interesting because farming is not what VR usually looks at as paycheck income or wage income. It pays differently.
Mm-hmm.
We also get involved in some business planning and exhibition of how income will flow for that particular farm business.
Sure. Sure. Now, what kind, you mentioned physical disabilities, but what other disabilities can you address or evaluate for the program?
So we also work with mental health,
mm-hmm,
issues.
Mm-hmm.
We don't directly counsel, but make sure people get connected to that. Many people may have seen articles, stating that farming has a high incidence of suicide and pretty high incidence of mental and behavioral health problems. And a lot of that is rooted in the fact that what makes us, great in rural America, that ability to solve all your own problems and be independent, are also some of the most challenging things when it comes to managing, positive mental health. So we do help people get through those. And then you know, anything that has to do with, you know, sometimes it's not so much a physical impairment, but a chronic condition that might be happening or an illness in the family and getting people through that. Mm-hmm. We work with everything from, you know, amputations that may have been a farm incident to arthritis, traumatic brain injuries, stroke, visual impairment, and then obviously the behavioral health is a huge component of what we do.
Sure.
And as you can imagine, if somebody has a farm incident or accident or has suddenly lost mobility in an auto accident and their lifestyle is going to change dramatically, some of us could still go to work. But if that happened to somebody that's a farmer, they're thinking, I can't do my job anymore. And that's a pretty tough thing to take. So there's, you know, innately some PTSD and some other things that happen when people are dealing with this. And we want to make sure they get that help that they need.
Oh, absolutely. That's critical. And earlier you mentioned, you know, for example, someone that might need a hand-controlled device or a lift. What other types of equipment is available out there for farmers with disabilities?
The list seems endless. We currently have on our website at www.agribility.org what we call our toolbox. And in that toolbox, we have about 1,600 items that we have actually vetted out for their safety and their use.
Sure.
And those are things that range from somebody using a GPS device in a tractor if they have a visual impairment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, often people think, oh, I can't see, I can't drive my tractor. Well, that's where technology has been amazing.
Absolutely.
And that GPS is so refined that you can plot out a field and plug that in and somebody can be in a tractor with very low vision and actually plow or harvest.
Oh.
So some of those more technology-driven tools are available.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes it's very simple modifications of the way someone does their work or a small tool that can help. So some of the simpler things we might do for somebody who has like a chronic condition like arthritis would be to change the handles on their tool. And we're fans of, you know, what can you do at low to no cost? Sometimes putting, you know, pipe insulation on tool handles can reduce wear and tear on your body and help somebody with grip issues because of arthritis. So we often look at those, what are the simpler solutions. Obviously, someone with really limited mobility or who has paraplegia of any sort, we're really looking at those bigger things like a lift.
Sure.
But sometimes the solutions are pretty simple, or it's a way to modify the way they do work. Sometimes if someone has an amputation, we might get involved up front to help them look at their prosthetic, because often people fitting a prosthetic are thinking about the weight of the body the prosthetic has to hold.
Mm-hmm.
We might remind the person that you need to tell that prosthetic engineer that you're going to hold 50-pound bags of grain frequently, so that prosthetic needs to be different than
sure.
you might have thought originally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of things to consider for people with different disabilities.
And it's important that you say that there's so much to consider, because in every single situation,
mm-hmm.
we always just say it's the first situation like this. There's not really one that's the same.
Yeah.
You know, even if somebody says, oh, I have a, you know, I'm paralyzed, I have this level of spinal cord injury, and you might think, oh, it's going to be the same. But what might not be the same is their farm operation
yeah.
or their family, because we also don't want a family stressed out by the fact that they don't want this person on a tractor or
mm-hmm.
they don't trust the technology, that kind of thing. So every situation is very different, and everything is treated in a very person-centered way.
Oh, absolutely. That's great. Now, for people that are interested in receiving services from Agribility, where can they find out more?
So the best thing to do, if they have access to a website, mm-hmm. Our website is fully accessible, mm-hmm. and that is at www.agribility.org, and it's Agribility for Agribility. If someone would prefer to call, our phone number is 800-825-4264. And those two resources, the website has a plethora of information about the project. It also links you to the toolbox. So if people are sometimes interested in what kind of technology is available for me out there, or what can I do to get better assistance with things, that toolbox is available on the website, as are several resources
mm-hmm.
and a lot of our online training. So every time we've done a webinar or any training online, we record that and leave it available on our website for people to access. So there's a lot of information that may be interesting to people, even if they aren't in agriculture or farming.
Absolutely. So again, the website is www.agrability.org.
That's correct.
And then the phone number is 800-825-4264.
Correct.
Great. Well, JoBeth, is there anything else you... I know we've covered a lot in these last few minutes, but is there anything else you'd like to add?
I don't think so. I just would encourage anybody that, you know, you may not know somebody that needs it now, but always just keep that in mind. If you just remember agribility and you have to go Google it at a later date, oftentimes we meet people and they have no need for us. But 10 years later, when their arthritis has really kicked in, maybe they do. Or all of a sudden they know somebody that had a farm accident and it's pretty tragic and now they do. So we always ask people, you know, we hope you don't need us now, but if you do, call. And if you don't need us now, keep us in mind for somebody that might down the road.
Oh, absolutely. You know, because like I mentioned earlier, it's something that us city people might not think about, but, you know, it's very important to people that do live in rural America or, you know, do any type of farming.
Yeah, and I always remind, you know, when I'm in cities, I'm always reminded that we all need to eat and
That's
we all
true.
Need our farmers to keep farming. And unfortunately, it's not a profession that lots of people are entering into right now.
Yeah.
So we want to keep those that are doing it healthy and continuing to produce.
Absolutely, including those with disabilities.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, JoBeth, for
your
time this morning.
Thanks so much for having us, Sandy. Appreciate you taking the time out to hear about agribility today.
Great. Well, everyone, that was JoBeth talking about the Agribility Project. This is the Lighthouse Beacon. We'll be right back.
This is Coach Mike Ditka. I'm asking you to support my friends at the Chicago Lighthouse, who are providing critical educational services to children who are blind, visually impaired, or multi-disabled. Through its innovative preschool, Birth to Three, and other cutting-edge programs, the Lighthouse is making a big difference in the lives of these children.
This is Dr. Janet Slick, President and CEO of the Chicago Lighthouse. These are exciting times here at the Chicago Lighthouse. The Chicago Lighthouse provides a community of comprehensive care for people who are blind, visually impaired, disabled, and veterans. To find out how you can help, call 312-997-3675 or visit us at chicagolighthouse.org.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Beacon on this Saturday morning. Unusual temperatures so
chilly.
Far. Yeah,
it's chilly. That's okay, though. It's December.
Mm-hmm.
It's Christmas.
Yes.
So it's all right. And Hanukkah. So it's okay that it's chilly right now.
And it's Chicago.
And it's Chicago in December. Lest us not forget.
And folks, if you have any questions or comments about the program, you can get in touch with us. You want to say how?
Sure. You can reach out to us on our Facebook page, and all you really need to do is do a search for Lighthouse Beacon, and you'll see us pop up right there. You can either send us a direct message that way or post on our Facebook page directly.
And that's me putting you on the spot.
It is, but you know what? I handled it like a champ.
Yes.
I'm a total pro.
Of course you are.
You're trying to stump me. Can't stump me.
Well, you know, if you have questions about the show, that's one way you can do it. But if you have any questions about anything we talk about here, on this program about the Chicago Lighthouse, you can go to our website. It's at chicagolighthouse.org. And you can sign up for various newsletters. There's tons of newsletters, lots of newsletters. There's the Chicago Lighthouse newsletter, the Chicago Lighthouse events, the North events. Remember, there's the Glenview location, about volunteering, assistive technology, and all of that can be achieved if you go to chicagolighthouse.org/newsletter/signup/. And you can subscribe to all of our mailing lists, and that way you won't be in the dark about anything.
Oh, we'll be so enlightened.
Mm-hmm.
Be perfect. And then we've also got our Amazon Smile.
Oh, yes.
Christmas right around the corner. You can still shop on Amazon. I'm a big Amazon fan, as most of us are. Said the wrong word. As most of us are. You know, the Prime memberships give you 2-day shipping, so there's plenty of time to still shop before Christmas. But added bonus, yes, if you shop through Amazon Smile and choose the Chicago Lighthouse as your organization, they will provide 0.5, they will bonus 0.5% of your purchase price will be donated. Again, my brain is stuffed with Sanskrit right now, so I'm not talking in English very good. But if you shop through Amazon Smile, 0.5% of the purchase price will be donated to the Chicago Lighthouse. There we go. But you do need to go in and you do need to delegate the Chicago Lighthouse as your organization, because Amazon Smile does provide the same type of service to many, many different organizations. So delegate Chicago Lighthouse as your charity. Go in, do a little shopping for Christmas or whatever, what have you. Mm-hmm. And then 0.5% of your purchase price will be donated to the Chicago Lighthouse.
Coming up next, we've got Michael C. Smith, PhD of the Bergman Institute for Psychological Support here at the Chicago Lighthouse. And he's going to be talking about a number of programs that he has. He has some groups and other sessions that he conducts during various times of the month. And so let's find out what he has to say. Well, with the holidays just around the corner, many people say it's the most wonderful time of the year. Unfortunately, not for everyone. With end-of-the-year deadlines, poor eating habits, family, and increasingly cold and dark winter days, it's easy for the holiday season to feel not so merry and bright. Feelings of depression and negative mood affect many people at the holidays, and not just those who've been diagnosed with clinical depression. Clinical psychologist Michael C. Smith of the Bergman Institute of Psychological Support here at the Chicago Lighthouse joins us to talk about holiday depression and the support services at the Bergman Institute. Dr. Smith, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Now, first of all, I just wanted to ask, why is it that some of us get depressed around the holidays?
Well, I think, as you already noted, there's a combination of kind of factors, right?
Mm-hmm.
But one of the most basic, I think, is this sense of, we all have this idea of how kind of the holiday should be, right? We kind of have this almost, we fall prey to how wonderful it should be. And as you say, everything should be merry and bright. And it's this wonderful time of year. And the reality is sometimes hard to deal with. Right, there's a press or a pressure that we have to kind of feel incredibly joyful and in the holiday spirit, except that's not reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is all some of the hassles that you noted, particularly around the holiday season. For some people, it's the difficulty with kind of relationships, particularly family relationships, because again, some of that time, both by choice and being kind of forced to be with your family, right?
Right.
It kind of brings up, the stuff doesn't go away just because it's the holidays.
Right.
And so sometimes that leads to kind of people being kind of sad.
Now, is depression more common within the blind and low vision communities than among people with sight, would you say? Or?
I don't think so. It certainly is one of the difficulties that people who are blind or have low vision have to kind of adjust to, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about kind of losing your sight as being, in many ways, there's lots of losses that everyone experiences. And so one of the difficulties with loss is how you adjust to it. One of the more common unhealthy ways of adjusting to it is to get really, really sad or depressed. But that's, it's almost, it's understandable how that occurs, but I don't think it's necessarily more just because the loss is in your vision or being blind.
I know that, at least I'm guessing, that most of the time when you do work with someone, you are able to tailor, I guess, a treatment or a course of action to them because of their unique problem. But is there anything that you might be able to suggest in general that could lift folks out of the doldrums?
Sure. And you're right. It's somewhat tailored, but I think there's some universals too,
mm-hmm.
just because of kind of the human experience, right? So typically if you think about, now this is not just specific to the holiday season, but how you handle being sad, it seems like you kind of have two responsibilities, right? One of them is that you have to find healthy ways to kind of acknowledge and label and express whatever the sad feeling is. And there's lots of healthy ways to do that. Because the goal is you don't want to kind of hold it inside. You need to kind of get it out, right? You need to not hold on to it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you need ways to express it and get it out in healthy ways, right? The second responsibility then you have is to do things to feel slightly better, right? And there's a whole list of things to feel slightly better. Now, there isn't anything that's going to take you from sad to happy, right? You have to do a number of behaviors and then let that feel a little bit better in order to not stay stuck in the sad.
So for someone like me who, you know, sometimes I don't like the fact that it's cold and wintry and I get up in the morning, it's dark, I come home at night, it's dark.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what could I do to sort of lift myself out of that?
Move. You can relocate, right?
No. I thought about that.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I do hear what you're saying. And there is, you know, for some people it's much more difficult. And it has something to do just with the light and dark, right? How much light we have. But since the reality is that we live here, right, then it becomes kind of your responsibility to figure out ways to do things to feel slightly better. And so for some of those, and for even for myself, right, because I live in this area too, mm-hmm. right, is that you got to figure out ways to find joyful and fun things to do in the winter, right? So maybe cross-country skiing or make sure that you're have more stuff scheduled with friends, right?
Right.
Do stuff that is more fun, right?
Yeah.
And that's one of the positives of this particular holiday season, right? Is you can watch Hallmark movies, Christmas movies, and
yeah, I do like movies. There also you take go. A lot of vitamin D3.
There you go. There you go. Everybody could do that.
All right, now tell us about the Bergman Institute. Now, how long have you been there?
I realize somebody said I have been there about 18 months, I think. Yeah. Okay. So,
what kind of the services do you offer?
Yeah. So I'm a psychologist, clinical psychologist, and so I consult, and so I'm here one day out of the week.
Mm-hmm.
That's Thursdays during the day. We provide both individual and group therapy. Individual also then includes at times family members, you know, if it's a couple, sometimes couple therapy. So I meet with people individually, and then we have a standing group for adults that meet every other week. And then I also help in the senior program where we do a senior group every other week.
Now, does a person need a recommendation to make use of the services at the Institute? Or?
Yeah, typically the best way to do it is that you would schedule a meeting with me, and we would sit down and kind of talk and figure out a plan from there. Even for the group, it's good to meet with me individually the first time, just so that I have a sense of being able to explain what the group does and et cetera. But the group is open to anybody really with any kind of visual impairment or being blind.
And that was my next question. Yeah. What are some things that you do for the group?
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest function of the group is it allows people who have visual problems or are blind to share their experiences. So that particular group, that's really important, just to be able to share. Remember we talked about not holding on to some of those feelings and experiences. So being able to share, it's really important. I think the other really neat function is that people have figured out lots of ways to work around difficulties and, you know, what's the term nowadays, right? They've learned hacks for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've learned how to, right. They've learned ways to handle specific problems that they share with each other, which I think is really a nice thing. They share resources and other meetings and, again, new technology and, you know, just how to navigate the bus system and paratransit and et cetera.
Okay, so you mentioned contacting you. How can an individual do that mm-hmm. if they'd like to take part in the services?
Sure. The best way is to call the Low Vision Clinic, and if you talk to the receptionist there, they can start to contact me and also set up appointments to see me.
Okay, and so you're just here one day a week?
I'm here Thursdays one day a week, and then really every other Tuesday morning also.
And you have the groups.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, I certainly appreciate you coming by and telling us about the Bergman Institute for Psychological Support.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully people will have questions and get in contact with you.
Yeah, I know it's kind of scary to kind of make that initial contact.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes really a lot of courage to do that. But if you think about it, what I'm trying to help people understand is it takes a lot of courage to kind of deal with all kinds of problems, including vision loss. And so my encouragement always is that you tap into how brave you are, you make the call, and what you'll discover is that there is ways to live a more meaningful life, to be more engaged.
He is Michael C. Smith, PhD, clinical psychologist at the Bergman Institute for Psychological Support here at the Chicago Lighthouse.
1.4 million people in Illinois really want to work but can't. If they get jobs, they could lose their Medicaid health coverage, and private insurance is difficult to obtain. This is the reality for people with disabilities. The Health Benefits for Workers with Disabilities program can help. HBWD is a state program that provides health insurance for working individuals with disabilities. Call 800-226-0768 or visit hbwdillinois.com. Don't let your disability keep you from working.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Good morning. I am Sandy Murillo.
And I am Brett Shishkoff. And you are listening to the Lighthouse Beacon.
How are you today, Brett?
I am doing great, or what you like to say, perfect.
That's right, perfect.
So it's a perfect Saturday morning for us here on the Beacon, and I've been pretty busy.
Yeah.
You've
been perfectly busy, huh?
I've been perfectly busy. I've actually been out to see a few different plays this past week. I've actually seen three since the last time we spoke.
Wow, three plays, huh?
Yeah, I went out, let's see, it was last Thursday, I went out to the Looking Glass, got to see Hard Times. It's a Charles Dickens, it's based off of a Charles Dickens book. It was his last book he wrote.
Sure.
It was okay. I normally am very impressed with the Looking Glass. In this case, it was,
sure.
It probably was my least favorite, but it was still good.
Mm-hmm.
They had some circus type stuff that was going on stage, so that probably was really, really cool to actually see. But for me, it was just a little hard to follow. There was a few different stories going on, and then when they all did come together, it just seemed anticlimactic for me. So it was okay. The audio description was done well.
Sure.
It was Martin Wilde.
He's great.
Yeah,
I got to listen to him when I went to the opera, and he does excellent. He's great.
Yeah, he does a lot of them. He does a lot of the audio description, but what's really cool now in Chicago, it seems like we're starting to see a few new voices with audio description, so we're getting some younger people in there. And so the last few plays I've seen, Goodman had a new audio describer for A Christmas Carol, and then I was at the Carole King musical yesterday, and it was a new audio describer. I didn't recognize her voice. I didn't get her name. She didn't say it while I was listening or, when I had the headset on.
Yeah.
But she was a new voice as well. A Carole King, a beautiful Carole King musical, it definitely makes you fall in love with music again.
Really?
That's like really what it made me feel like, is the music was great. I'll paint you a picture of kind of how most of the scenes get set up. It's a lot about her songwriting at first. In the first act, it's her as a songwriter writing these songs with her husband at the time for popular artists like the Drifters. So you're seeing her in this room on the piano writing these songs, playing on the piano, and then it transitions on the opposite side of the stage, the live performance of the Drifters performing that song, or another artist performing one of the hits that they were able to come up with.
Right, right.
And so it was just really cool how they were able to kind of like split the stage into kind of like two halves of, you have kind of what we're seeing from the planning stages of a song to the completed product with the full instrumentation, background vocals, and then the artists themselves singing it. It was just very, very cool to see them be able to transition so smoothly. And when they're in the writing portion of it, they actually have a little bit of the chorus going, or the orchestra going behind the piano that's playing. So she's already, you kind of see what she has planned in her head of what she wants the full orchestration to be of this song. And so it was just really, really neat from my standpoint of, like, being a person who's like a recording engineer and liking the behind the scenes type of thing.
Yeah.
It was so cool to be able to see from like the writer's side and then the artist side. And then the second act is her as an artist, and you see that transition from her being a writer to her writing her own songs and also singing them, performing them. So it was just a great musical if you're a person who likes the oldies, 60s, 70s type music. There is just hit after hit that you can't help but sing along with. Every single song that they performed, I've heard of, I was able to sing along with them.
And
it was like almost going to a throwback concert.
Yeah.
That's really what it felt like most of the time when you're listening or paying attention to this play.
That's something that I really do want to do as well, see the Broadway in Chicago shows.
Yeah, they are very well done.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I can imagine.
I know that you wanted to touch on, there was a new update with one of the apps that we've been talking about the last few weeks.
Yeah, so very briefly, I know that you interviewed Jeff Petty from Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And this Microsoft Sing AI app.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotten a few new updates, as you mentioned in the interview. Now you can read things like print documents. It has facial recognition.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, like the latest update, I should say, you can also recognize U.S. currency
mm-hmm.
and a few other currencies. I can't remember right now which ones, but
mm-hmm.
Colors. The amount, the level of lighting that's in the room,
okay.
And what's even more, handwritten text, which, Brett, that's something that, you know, I find pretty amazing. I haven't tried this out yet, but I find that very amazing.
Yeah, I'm interested to try that out.
Yeah.
Once you told me before we got on the air about it, I'm skeptical.
Yeah.
So I definitely, because
it's something that's so
hard.
Unique, yeah. Difficult.
Everybody has their own way of like writing specific letters, especially in cursive. Like, it's that would be very, very difficult. I wonder if it has to be printed, like handwritten, printed letters, because not a lot of people write that way.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be a feature that would really help too many people.
Exactly.
But if it could read cursive, wow. I would be really impressed to see how well that works. So me and you are going to give it a try over this next coming up week, and we'll probably talk about it a little bit further next week. How does that sound,
Sandy? That's right. We'll talk more about it.
Yes, and we will be right back with more from Lainey Bryan. Luke?
Sounds perfect.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Yeah, I have an undergrad from DePaul Computer Information Systems and a master's in Business Information Technology. And I know I have a disability, and it can be challenging trying to get a position. You know, they want to hire someone with a disability. So that was one of the challenges I had also. Going to a job interview and people look at you strange because you have a disability. I've gotten frowned at. They'll say, we'll call you or we'll consider, but it never happened. The Lighthouse has provided me with employment. I've been here since 2013, November. I've grown. I transitioned from Illinois Tollway to UI Health. The Lighthouse is awesome. They really work with people with disability, visually impaired, and veterans, get employment, you know, find employment, because the percentage of people with disability is unemployed is extremely high. People that have degrees and they still can't find a job. So the Lighthouse is very supportive in helping them find employment. One word, I say awesome.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Welcome back to The Beacon, folks. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I'm Brian Hawkins.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
This time of the show, we usually go into your segment coming up, but as a primer, did you know that recently there is a gentleman who celebrated his 113th birthday?
Oh, for heaven's sake. Where?
The world's oldest man, Francisco Nunez Oliveira. Yeah.
Where is he?
That's an excellent question. You're such good questions.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You are not prepared. You are not prepared for my brain-busting questions.
No, I am not.
That's
and
okay.
I think I erased it.
Irrelevant.
It's somewhere here. I think it's in Spain.
Oh, well, that's
okay.
All right.
And he did it with a sponge cake, milk, and a glass of wine every day.
So, wait, he had sponge cake, milk, and a glass of wine every day? That's the secret to his longevity?
Yes.
Wow, really?
Notice no yoga.
No yoga. No yoga. Wah, wah.
113. But I guess there's many ways of doing it. In some cases, yoga does help. And also yogurt.
I don't know if I've heard that, but I'm going to take it.
No, remember,
I'm going to take it and run with it.
Those commercials, the Russians eating yogurt?
I don't, honey.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't.
All right.
My grandma's about to turn 97.
Wow.
I know, on the 18th of this month.
Congratulations.
So, on Monday,
I
know.
What's her secret?
You know, she's really just lived a healthy life. Like, she went to the gym until she was in her 80s. She square danced until she was in her 80s. She's been a vegetarian for, you know, her whole adult life anyway. She's just really has taken very good care. I mean, I think that she's not even on medication. I think that she has eye drops for her eyes, but beyond that, she doesn't even take meds. So she's hopefully, knock on formica, the good genes got passed down to me, but we'll see.
Well, you know, she's like Francisco, because actually the sponge cake and milk he had for his birthday party, but his diet consisted of homegrown vegetables and a daily glass of red wine.
See? That's what it is. Just take care of yourself, peeps.
Mm-hmm.
Take care of yourself. You'll get there.
All right.
We'll get there. All right.
So, well, we said all that to get to this, which is an uplifting story. Brought to us by Lainey Kleeman, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Brian Hawkins. Today we have a nice heartwarming story about a single mom who works overtime just so she can restore $500 to a homeless man who was robbed. She works at Walmart, and she saw a viral video of 60-year-old Charles Reynolds chasing a man out of a local Walmart. The man had stolen $500 from Charles, who had just cashed his paycheck. And our friend Charles is essentially homeless. He was not able to catch the thief in the Walmart parking lot. And the money that was stolen from him was crucial. That was his livelihood. He says he's pretty much homeless and doing the best I can to get up and get out of there. And yeah, that money meant a lot. So our friend Carrie, our single mom friend Carrie, saw the video, and she knew how Charles felt because she had, just a few years prior, had been living in low-income housing and raising her kids as a single mom. And so she said she understood what it is to be poor. And she wanted to help Charles out, but she doesn't just have the $500 to kind of hand over to him. So she spent weekends clocking in 10-hour workdays and setting aside her overtime money to give to Charles. They met at the Largo Police Department. This took place in Florida. And so she could give him the money. And Walmart had actually already replaced the stolen money that Charles had stolen from him, but Carrie still wanted to give what she had earned for him to pay it forward. And she says, you know, someone had once helped her out when she was struggling, and she wanted to keep the chain going. So hopefully with Carrie's help, Charles will soon be back on his feet and able to get things going again. But I just thought that was a very nice, selfless story of a woman who just saw a man in need and a woman again. And there's kind of a theme here that people who don't have much of, you know, in terms of means themselves, mm-hmm. are still doing whatever they can to help out others who they still see as less fortunate than themselves. So I think it's just a lovely reminder for this time of year to be kind to one another and take care of each other.
So does that pass the test? Does it make you go,
aww? Does, yes, for me, it makes me warm and fuzzy inside.
Well, yes, I felt that way too, but I thought it was chills from cold outside.
No, it's not. Your cold heart is being warmed from within with stories of goodness.
All right.
So that's this week's The Awe Factor.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that inspiring story.
You're welcome.
And now we're going to move along, and our friends are waiting in the laboratory. And this time it's going to be Luke along with Juan Suarez, and they'll be talking about assistive technology and probably some other stuff. Last week they were talking about his trip to London a little bit. He was hobnobbing with the royals. So,
what?
Yeah, well, that's Luke.
He's look at me. My name is Luke. My name is Luke Scriven, and I'm friends with the royals.
And here we go, into the laboratory.
I'm Juan Suarez here on 820 AM WCPT, and let's open up Luke's laboratory. Good morning, Luke.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm great. And what are we talking about this week?
Well, in case you didn't notice, the holidays are upon us. And so I thought we'd talk a little bit about some holiday gift ideas for all of your friends, family, any loved ones.
And what are those gifts?
Well, we have all sorts of things. So for people who aren't aware, we have a wonderful website, which is lighthousetoolsforliving.com. And we also have two wonderful stores. We have one at our downtown location, 1850 West Roosevelt Road. And we have one at our Glenview location, 222 Waukegan Road. And in those stores, we carry a number of excellent items which might make good gift ideas. We have things in the store ranging from a couple of dollars all the way up to a few thousand dollars if you're feeling extremely generous this holiday season. And so, you know, we have things such as different types of portable lights, which can be extremely useful if you have a loved one with a visual impairment. So different types of portable lighting. We have things like Braille slates and styluses. We have bold line notepaper, 18-month calendars. Obviously, we're about to move into the new year, and so an 18-month calendar might be useful, and these are all large prints. And we sell pens with a broad tipped, you know, dark black ink to write in them as well. And we have, you know, all of our assistive technology items. So we have electronic magnifiers, we have devices which read aloud, all those type of things. And we also have games and toys for the kids as well. So some great things, I think, for people who are aware of our Sandy's View blog, which is a popular blog done by our own Sandy Murillo here at the Lighthouse. She has highlighted a few items, including a Rubik's Cube that we got, which is a tactile Rubik's Cube. And so if you are a person who is blind, then you can actually feel each of the sides has a different symbol, and so you can feel when you have the sides lined up correctly. So all sorts of cool things like that.
Now, when they want to come into the store to maybe have some of these items demonstrated to them, maybe they want to come in to purchase them, do they need to make an appointment, or could they just walk in, or how does that work?
Well, you know, people can walk in anytime, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, and although we will be closed over Christmas, obviously, so bear that in mind. But yes, Monday to Friday, most weeks, 9 to 5, we're open. Feel free to wander in. You can take a look around, and most stuff is pretty self-explanatory. However, if you did want to sit down with somebody and go through things, especially the assistive technology devices, which can be a bit more complex, if you wanted somebody to sit down with you and show you how to use those, then you can make an appointment, and you would do that with myself. You could call me at 312-997-3649 or email at luke@chicagolighthouse.org.
All right, and can you one more time give us the two addresses for the two locations?
Sure. So main location, which is where I work, is 1850 West Roosevelt Road. And our other location is 222 Waukegan Road.
All right. I'm Juan Suarez, and this is Luke's Laboratory on the Beacon. And now it's time for
Customer of the Week. Okay, I've had some great customers this week, as I usually do. And one of my favorite customers this week has been a customer who has recently become visually impaired. And he was not really aware of the different types of devices which were available. And so we did a review of all the different things. Now, the interesting thing about this particular gentleman is that he had Stargardt's. And Stargardt's is a juvenile form of macular degeneration. And so oftentimes people with Stargardt start to exhibit central vision loss when they are younger. So maybe 19, 20, maybe a little bit older. But this particular individual had not started exhibiting until he was in his 40s. So he was quite a late onset. And his vision was still fairly good. But, you know, he was obviously kind of going through the stages of figuring out, you know, what type of things were available to help him as his vision, you know, progressively got worse. And so we sat down, we took a look at all the different equipment, and he was quite frankly amazed at all of the different things which were available to help him, including, you know, the accessibility built into his cell phone, including all of the different assistive technology devices, which were there, and the driving aid, which is called the bioptic, and all of these different things. And so, you know, it really highlighted to me how much of an impact assistive technology can have. It can really make you feel at ease when you know the range of things which are available to help you, and when you realize that you're not going to be, you know, stuck in your house alone with nothing to do. There are things out there that will enable you to carry out all the different, you know, things which you would like to do in life.
And it's getting better by, it seems like, by the week.
You know, it's absolutely amazing. There's more and more things coming out all the time. A lot of, you know, free things available now with the cell phones, a bunch of free apps and things which can be super useful. And, yeah, new technology devices every single month, and they just get better and better.
All right. I'm Juan Suarez, and this is another edition of Luke's Laboratory right here on the Beacon.
That's it. We'd like to thank our friends Brett and Sandy for their contributions to the show and, you know, taking us out of our little four walls and bringing the bigger world into our little radio station here.
Mm-hmm.
Many thanks as well to Luke Scriven and Juan Suarez for their contributions in Luke's Laboratory. And, of course, our big boss lady, Ms. Janet Slick.
I don't know if she does yoga or not, so.
She might.
She might.
She might very well.
Shape.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, the president and CEO, you said?
Yes.
All right.
Thanks to all of our listeners for tuning in and humoring us each and every week. We couldn't do it without you. We will talk to you next week. Have a safe and happy week, and stay warm.